Continuing our exploration of the Sunday Psalms appointed for Lent this year, Psalm 32 makes a quite radical, easily missed, but quite radical assertion. The psalmist asserts that righteousness is not about moral willfulness, but about trusting in God's mercy. Righteousness is not about moral willfulness, but trusting in God's mercy. So often, righteousness, when we think of it, is the righteous person is the person who wills to do the right thing. I'm going to do exactly the right thing. And there's nothing wrong with wanting and intending to do the right thing. But there is a hair's width of a line between wanting to do the right thing and idolizing our ego. And when we understand wanting to do the right things in a willful way, what happens is when we don't do the right thing, we suppress it and then project it on the other. So that person is evil and bad and going to hell and wrong and all these other things. And deep down inside, they are judged that way by me, because they remind me of my own stuff. That's moral willfulness. That's running the risk of making your ego into an idol. I will do the right thing. The psalmist, in contrast, says, all right, so here's the story, friends. I messed up. I sinned. I did the wrong thing. I really made a mess of it. And then I tried to suppress it and ignore it and pretend it didn't happen. And what happened when I tried to suppress it and push it behind me is that I felt really awful. The thought was always there. It was always threatening to creep into my awareness. It felt like the heavy hand of God was upon me. The reality is that you can push things down, but it's like sitting on a beach ball in the pool. It's going to whoosh up from out from under you. And so the psalmist says, so finally, what I did was I confessed my sin to God, and I felt God's forgiveness. And that put an end to the matter. So in verses 1 through 8, the psalmist tells that story, and then in 9 through the end of the psalm, the psalmist speaks to the people that are hearing the story and saying, so let me teach you about this. Let me explain this to you. And goes on to champion the idea of being clear with God and vulnerable with God about our sins, our mistakes, our errors, and discovering that we can always trust in God's mercy. And that is the psalmist's definition of righteousness. So that righteousness is no longer getting it right every time. Instead, righteousness is doing the best I can and going to God with my sins, my errors, my mistakes. I worked with a friend, Leslie, who was the on the staff in the Diocese of Chicago. She was the head of the financial office of the diocese. And Leslie had a rule that she, or not a rule, but a guideline, a piece of wisdom. And she said that many times it is a good technique to fall on your own sword. And I saw Leslie do this to great effect. If she felt that she was blocked in relating to someone and really wanted to connect with them and hear what they were trying to say, she would say, "I'm sorry. I didn't do what you wanted. Help me understand." And I saw many a time when that burst open blocks and defenses and ineffectiveness and made for a better working relationship. It goes better when we can be straight up about our vulnerabilities and our mistakes. I jotted down some words from the psalm because the psalm is brilliantly structured. It's really quite fascinating. So in the first half of the psalm, verses 1 to 8, the describing the condition of not talking to God about the sins and the mistakes and the errors, the psalmist uses words withered, groaning, heavy, dried up. You can feel the weight and the burden in those words. But when talking about the experience of saying to God, "All right, God, I need your forgiveness. Here's where I totally messed this up. Forgiven, put away, no guilt, no guile, forgave, hiding place, preservation, deliverance." I don't think we often think about owning up to our sins as an act of deliverance. But the psalmist does. It's really interesting, isn't it? And the same is true then when the psalmist then says, "Okay, so let me teach you what I learned from this story." And when the psalmist talks about the experience of hiding out from his own sins and errors and mistakes, he uses images like horse or mule, no understanding, bit and bridle, tribulations, wicked. And I'm really intrigued with that image of bit and bridle. Not that I know a thing about riding horses, because I don't. I will admit that, right? But the idea there is that by not dealing with his sins, his errors, his mistakes, the psalmist feels controlled by them. Like bit and bridle. When we try to suppress stuff and ignore it and not deal with it, often it controls us. So I think that bit and bridle image is particularly interesting. But the psalmist, in speaking about the benefits of being straight up about your stuff, says, "Let me instruct, teach, and guide." And then the first descriptor, the first assertion the psalmist makes after instruct, teach, and guide is mercy embraces. Mercy embraces. Isn't that wonderful? The idea that mercy, just God's mercy, just embraces us if we'll let it. If we'll let it, mercy embraces. And the result of mercy embracing, trust, glad, rejoice, joy. What wonderful words. How different are those words than withered, groaning, heavy, and dried up? How liberating are those words? How much deliverance is there in trust, glad, rejoice, and joy? Sometimes, you know, people get this, I feel, really backwards and wrong. It's like God is waiting to judge, you know, tapping the divine foot, just waiting for it to happen. Right? And we're supposed to confess in the hopes of getting God to loosen up a little bit and forgive us. This psalm blows that idea right out of the water. This psalm says that God's mercy is trustworthy, and what God waits to do so longingly is embrace us with mercy. And we block the flow of that mercy when we hold on to our sins and our errors and mistakes and try to suppress them and keep everybody from seeing them, and we get all tight and rigid and blocked. That's not the point. God is always seeking to give. God is always seeking to embrace us with mercy. The original beginnings of evangelical thought, unlike a lot of what we hear today, was Anglican thought about the wonders of God's embracing mercy. It wasn't about particular social positions. It wasn't about who's in and who's out, who's going to hell and who's going to heaven. The earliest evangelicals were Anglicans, and they wanted people to know how incredibly delivered and liberated they felt when they realized that God's mercy was waiting to embrace them. That's exactly what this psalmist is talking about. And it would be nice if we could get the definition of evangelical today back to its origins. God's mercy and forgiveness, God's call to us to engage in the act of confession, is in a desire on God's part to unblock us and to let us feel that deliverance. Let us feel that freedom. To let us know that mercy embraces us.